I am not I. I'm not. I'm more than you see, than I see when I look in the mirror, says our poet. I'd like to echo their lead. There is this other me, the me I begin to feel again when I enter into ardent prayer or deep meditation, the me I would be from morning to night if I didn't need food or want warmth or crave coffee. The modern understanding breaks us into four selves: our physical self, our emotional self, our thinking self, and our spiritual self. Physical practice comes naturally. We eat, we sleep, we motor around, however we do. Emotional practice also seems to come pretty naturally. Somebody cuts us off on our way here. The emotional response, it comes pretty quick, right? It's right there, and I bet all of us came into this world screaming. We can't seem to ignore intellectual thought either. Our thinking self, the thinking mind, it's a monkey mind, jumping from idea to idea without pause, keeping us up at night, right? Anybody else last night? You may hear my voice is a little hoarse. What about our spiritual self, though? Spiritual practice, that's a task, something that we do when we have time, or we can't figure out what else to do, or when life's pain has brought us to our knees, right? I'd argue the opposite, though. Spirituality, it's just as much a part of our daily lives as our thinking, our emotionality, our physicality, that it is there beside us. It is that I that is not I talking to us in all times and all places, whether we give it a spiritual name or not, like meditation or yoga. It doesn't need to be that thing. It's there. So let me prove this to you, I hope. We'll see. Think about the fact that you are thinking. Think about the fact that you are thinking. Really. Now feel the emotions you're feeling. Feel the emotions you're feeling. Now experience the weight of your hands. Experience the weight of your hands. In doing all three, you are being self-reflective, an I considering another I. Our poets in the reading, they did the same. Self-reflection is, I'd argue, the seat of spirituality. It's where it all begins. It's what allows us to imagine ourselves, and it's what allows us to imagine divinity, God, truth, that which is always with us, but is somehow beyond. Spirituality begins when we reflect on ourselves, when we become aware of our own awareness. Wacky stuff, right? Let me say it another way. We are not zombies. No matter how much fun we have watching them on TV and in movies, we are not zombies. The rogue scientist philosopher David Chalmers talks a lot about zombies. Look, he says, I'm not a zombie, and I pray that you're not zombies either. But the point is that evolution could have produced zombies instead of conscious creatures, and it didn't. Still might, though. What does he mean when he says zombies? He doesn't mean groaning, blood-splattering, walking corpses. Instead, imagine that you have a doppelganger. This person physically resembles you and behaves identically to you. He or she holds conversations, eats and sleeps, gets stuck on 495 or wax pool. The only difference is that the doppelganger has no consciousness and could therefore just as easily eat your brain. A few services back, I shared how our brains process 11,000 bytes of information per second, while we are conscious of only 40. Our brains process 11,000 bytes of information per second, but we're conscious of only 40. The unconscious is far more active than our consciousness. After the service, Roshan, a member here, reminded me that the craft of meditation is designed to make us more conscious of that mass of unconscious stuff. Perhaps, he reflected, if we use spiritual practice, we could get to 50 or even 60 more of those bytes, those 11,000 bytes that we miss. We might never get to the 11,000, but as Rabbi Tarpan used to say, it is not for you to complete the work, but neither are you free to ignore it. Spiritual practice is the practice of becoming more conscious, more aware of our own awareness, and that more aware of that which is beyond us. A yoga teacher, Hari Das, once taught, if a pickpocket sees a saint, all he sees are the pockets. Let me break this down. If a marketer sees a saint, all she sees is a potential market. If a car salesman sees a saint, all he sees is a potential sale. If a European American citizen sees an Arab Muslim, all she feels is fear. If a pickpocket sees a saint, all he sees are his pockets. Spiritual practice is the practice of seeing the saint as a saint, the human as a human. The gift of this morning, whether it's raining or not, thank you, John, as a gift. Another gift we have been given, as says our invocation. In 1994, David Chalmers, the one who earlier talked about zombies, ascended a conference stage and asked the question that would rock the world. The brain, Chalmers began, poses all sorts of problems to keep scientists busy. How do we learn? How do we store memories or perceive things? How do you know to pull your hand away from scalding water? But these are all easy problems. In the scheme of things, given enough time and money, experts will figure them out. There is only one truly hard problem of consciousness. Chalmers said, it's this. Why on earth should all these complicated brain processes feel like anything from the inside? Said another way, why are we aware of our own awareness? Why aren't we just brilliant robots capable of retaining information, of responding to noises and smells and hot saucepans? And how does the brain manage it? How does the 1.4 kilogram lump of moist pinkish beige tissue inside our skulls give rise to something as mysterious as the experience of being that pinkish beige lump and the body to which it is attached? Because I'm a person of both science and faith, Chalmers was speaking to that place within me where the two fields meet. Many of you are simply people of science and faith, right? Science and faith out there. So the question arises, why should all these complex brain processes feel like anything from the inside at all? Why, when we contemplate ourselves, are we conscious of our own consciousness? Why do we talk to ourselves? Really? As I get older, I talk to myself more and more. I hope that's a good thing. Is that nexus of knowing, that feeling of feeling, is that the soul? Has God placed it there within us, or the holy of our understanding? Or is it just the way the brain functions? Is it just the function of a chemical machine? The neuroscientists steer clear of this problem. They show us what part of our brains do what sort of function. The flight or fight, the memory, the regret, even the contemplation of divinity, they can pinpoint in our brains, but they can't show us from where consciousness emerges. The sketchy theory argues that certain neurons firing at certain frequencies might somehow be a cause of our inner awareness, though how this happens is far from clear. How can you see how God might figure in here for many? What is that voice I hear in my own head? Why does my consciousness keep speaking to me? Why is it so often right when I am so often wrong? All I can say for certain is that there are sometimes when I am more of a zombie, and sometimes when I am less. Sometimes when I'm paying attention to that voice, the still small voice within, and other times when I am not. I know we are not that different, you and I. I know you also talk to yourselves. Admit it. I know you have also left your house driving in that usual direction to school or work when you meant to go to the store, right? And there are those times when, like our poet, we are angry while our other self, our conscious, or perhaps our soul self, forgives. Amen. Zombie mind can be comforting when we are doing routine tasks. It might even feel like meditation to blindly fold the laundry, to sleepily wash the dishes. But Thich Nhat Hanh reminds us that meditation is not mindless. It is essentially concentration. That's what makes it a practice. Only when we are aware of the soap and the dishes are we meditating. Conscious of that which our zombie mind might ignore, listening for the truth in the bubbles. It's not a coincidence that zombies are supposedly brain eaters. You could also say that they are soul eaters. This is a perfect metaphor for the zombie mind. I need to be clear. The scientists, they're still debating. Some of them wouldn't agree at all with what I'm getting to. The atheist Daniel Dennett accuses Chalmers of an unscientific approach and argues that consciousness is pure fiction, that we are indeed and solely chemical machines. Chalmers counters by saying that perhaps Dennett is a zombie. My scientific self is enchanted by the debate, but my faithful self is ready to use what it seems I've always known from intuition, that this thing we call consciousness leads us to profound spiritual depth, whether it exists in any real sense, according to science, or not. Listening to that voice within in itself is a spiritual experience. It is our evasion of zombie mind, our commitment to be our truer, full self. Have you seen that United Church of Christ placard, "God is still speaking, comma"? Have you seen that around? This is their most recent branding. God is still speaking, comma, as if there is more there. It's kin to the Unitarian idea that revelation is not sealed. We have not learned all that must be learned of truth, nor have we witnessed all that must be witnessed of beauty. Revelation is not sealed. Consciousness is not done. I'm not I. So how can we become better listeners to that voice that calls us beyond the comma, beyond the revelation we know? We don't need to listen to that voice that is telling us we're not enough. That's a different voice. Nor do we need to listen to the voice that is reminding us that there's ice cream in the freezer, though sometimes that's a nice voice to hear. Nor do we need to listen to that voice that never stops berating us. For whatever it was we missed or forgot or didn't do perfectly, these voices belong to monkey mind. How can we become better listeners to that voice that when we are scared tells us, "Be not afraid, I am with you"? Or when we are angry, "Why do you rage? You are so much more than your anger." Or when we find joy, that voice that says, "Yes, may it be so," and celebrates with us. According to the Hebrew scriptures, the voice spoke quite clearly to Moses, who met the holy panim el panim, or face to face. I learned that yesterday at the service for Rabbi Amy. Panim el panim. After 3 days of preparing for an event to occur on Mount Sinai, Moses, or Moshe in the Hebrew tongue, gathered the people at the foot of the mountain. The people had been slaves in Egypt, zombies, you might say. Forced to work for Pharaoh's gain, they had been freed, but as yet free only to wander and hunger and wait. Suddenly, the mountain was engulfed in a furious storm of clouds and thunder, and Moshe began to speak to God. And as Moshe spoke, God answered him. As the story goes, what was Moshe saying to God? And what was God saying to Moshe? Panim el panim. What do you say to yourself when you have been wandering and you feel utterly alone? And what does that other that is within you say back? The Hebrew word for God's response is richly ambiguous. The word kol is used, which literally means voice or sound. Some say that Moshe heard the sound of thunder, but his gift of prophecy, if you will, was the ability to hear a holy truth within the sound of thunder, while all that everyone else heard was just thunder. When the pickpocket meets the saint, all the pickpocket sees are the pockets. When the zombie meets the holy, all the zombie hears is thunder. An old man of Asian heritage walks down my street often. When I first saw him, I was scared of him. He walks with a very pronounced limp, and his face is contorted, and he stumbles as he goes. The next few times I saw him, I started asking myself, what is it that makes him walk that way? And then I started to wonder, perhaps he has had a stroke, because that often happens when someone has a stroke. And I started to get less and less afraid. And then after that, I finally walked up to him and looked into his eyes and said, hello, good morning. He paused and he turned towards me and looked into my eyes and smiled with such a wild abandon that in his face, I saw God. I saw goodness. I saw grace. I saw beauty. I'd met the saint, and I had finally seen the saint. His eyes told of an arduous journey and an iron will. How often have we failed to hear or understand the voice of the Holy speaking to us through nature or human acts of courage? How often have we failed to see the inner divinity in human acts of creation or compassion? Millions and millions and millions of times every day. The prophet Isaiah says, "What is it that dulls minds, that stops ears, that allows us to see without perceiving, that makes us, in the words of Chambers, zombies?" It is not for you to complete the work, but neither are you free to ignore it. Dear ones, I find that we are the most blind when it comes to the light within, and that still small voice that resides within our own selves. I know one thing for certain. All of you have been at times like that man I met on the street, regaining strength, charging forward when life has crippled you, with some deep pain, some deep loss, physical or emotional. And when I meet you in those times of trial and those times of rebirth, I too see the holy of my understanding. I see the holy as I understand it, at work in the depth of your feeling, your strength, your resilience, your impassioned ache to understand. What I pray is that you will train yourselves again and again to see that same blessing within and to listen to the way it blesses you. Whether you call it God or light or consciousness or understanding, we were given this strange gift to perceive our own perceiving, to be conscious of our inner being. It is from this gift that all spiritual practice emerges. I look at you, dear saints, and I see saints. I listen to you and I hear the work of your consciousness, that still small voice of truth that is ever working to deliver you. May you be so kind as to practice seeing it yourselves and hearing the same in yourself and another. Amen.